Quaker.com podcast. My name is Ben Stone. Today is Thursday, July 5th, 2012, and this is podcast number 164. I have some somewhat unpleasant stuff to go over today. I don't particularly enjoy this, but it needs to be done. Among us in the Liberty Movement, sometimes we need to go over things. Sometimes family fights are very productive. As long as people engaging in the family fight do so with the purpose of discovering the truth and not just fluffing their own egos, then family fights, and we're assuming that no actual physical aggression takes place, family fights can be very productive. And if you can set aside your ego, oftentimes a person can learn a lot from a family fight. My wife and I have been married now, let's see, this is 2012, so this will be 32 years that my wife and I have been married. And we have fought many times for long periods of time. Sometimes it just drug on and on and on. But the point was not to get the upper hand on each other. The point was to work out our differences and improve our relationship. And I, maybe brag, I don't know, maybe, but I can say with absolute confidence that my wife and I have the best relationship of any couple that I'm aware of. My mom and dad had a great relationship. My wife's mother and father had a great relationship. But honestly, I don't know of any couple that's had a better relationship than my wife and I. And it's taken 32 years of bumping into each other's nose to nose, just grinding on each other and constantly refining how we deal with each other to come to this point. Now, having said that, and one other little disclaimer I want to throw out too, I don't have a problem taking on another podcaster or another person in the Liberty Movement. I don't believe that I have any kind of responsibility to go to them first. If somebody is coming out in the public and they're making statements that I find, repulsive or wrong or even just flawed in some way, they're doing so in the public. And I have no responsibility whatsoever to go to them privately and talk to them about that. Even, I'll take a good friend of mine. Jack Spierko over at the Survival Podcast, is a good friend of mine. I like him. I have sat at his campfire and eaten his chicken. If it weren't for Jack, this podcast you're hearing right now would not exist. That's the kind of influence Jack has had on me. But there are some things that Jack is dead wrong about. If I want to know about riflemanship, or if I want to know about survival training, or if I want to know about prepping for disasters, I'm going to go to Jack. But there are things Jack knows nothing about that he talks about sometimes, specifically greenbacker type money issues. And so when he does that, I feel perfectly free, since he's talking in public and he's a public figure, and so am I. I feel perfectly free pointing out Jack's folly when he talks about greenbacker issues. I have no responsibility to go to him and argue with him privately. He knows that I believe differently than he does. There's no reason to fight things out separately. But we do have a crossover audience. So when he says something that supports the greenbacker money ideas, I have an obligation to my audience to point that out. And that's not a personal attack against Jack. That's just how things go. All right, so now I'm saying all that to say this. My problem is not with Jack today, so I'm not attacking Jack in any way. What I'm saying today is specifically in regards to Mark Stevens from the No State Project and Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends. There was a situation where a young lady found herself in trouble with the law in the state of Texas. And it's a very serious situation where she could spend hard time, hard felony time in a Texas state penitentiary. And there's a possibility she could lose her child over this. Now, this is not a small affair. This is not a parking ticket. This is not some little thing. This is a major aspect that could ruin a woman's life. And that level of importance, and the fact that she is a personal friend of Michael Dean's, that caused Michael Dean to make some statements, some of which that he has regretted and he's apologized for. But if you take out the emotional reaction, Michael had some really solid points where Mark Stevens actually gave this young woman some really dangerous advice. And then he's tried to backpedal and say it wasn't advice, and he's tried to say some different things. So what I want to do on today's podcast, I'm gonna play a little 5-minute clip of the debate between them, and it's got some parts in it where I interject some thoughts, so it's not entirely 5 minutes of the debate. And all this is available on out there on the internet. If you want the full versions of anything, you can check out everything I'm saying. First, I want to give a quick overview of what Mark Stevens does, because I've actually listened to Mark Stevens a lot over the years. Now, I will admit, in the last couple years, I haven't listened to him much because my philosophy has moved in a different direction than his. And I really don't think there's a lot I can learn from him anymore. But I have learned from Mark Stevens, and I do appreciate what he does, as long as what he is doing is within a realm of useful, in a useful realm. Okay, so now, so what does he do? Well, he catches the best thing that Mark Stevens does is if you have some kind of a low-level infraction, a parking ticket, speeding ticket, maybe a first-time drunk driving conviction where you were pulled over and you were for something else and they tested your, you did a breathalyzer test or whatever and you were on the border with it or whatever. These kind of situations where it's certainly going to be uncomfortable legally to try to deal with it, but it's not going to destroy your life. Or, and here's the other thing, or if it is an important issue and you're willing to really take this on as an activist issue and accept the responsibility and accept the possibilities of bad things might happen to you, if you're willing to accept that and you're willing to challenge the system for the sheer purpose of showing what a joke the entire legal system is in the United States, if you're willing to do that, then Mark Stevens has a great method of showing what a ridiculous system the so-called justice system in the U.S. is. He absolutely has foundational principles that and phrases and tricks that he uses in catching judges to make them say stupid things to really display how ridiculous the legal system is. But keep in mind, I've said this over and over and over, you never want to fight an enemy on his terms. Now, if you're in a bad situation, you need to defend yourself and you've got no other choice, then sure, you do whatever you have to do. But you never intentionally engage an enemy on his terms, on the battlefield he chooses, with the weapons that he is the best equipped with. That's just a crazy way, and by the timing, under the timing that is best to his advantage, that is a horrible way to fight an enemy. You want to catch an enemy on a battleground that you choose, and the timing you choose, using the weapons that you are best familiar with, and that your enemy is least familiar with. This is how you defeat an enemy. Not by marching right into his strongholds and taking him on according to his way. Now, Mark does some things where he's very famous for having taken on an IRS agent, a minor IRS agent, and getting them on the phone and getting them to say some all kinds of ridiculous things on the phone. And he has that on his website. You can go and listen to it. It's really quite comical, and I've listened to it over and over. I've linked to it on a lot of different posting boards and stuff. It's wonderful to listen to. But here's the important thing to realize. When you get some low-level person on the telephone and you dominate them like that, and I've done this. I've done it with NASA. I've done it when I was with GE. I've done it with GE employees and with GE contractors. I've done it with Time Warner Cable, my current internet so-called provider for whenever they actually do provide it. I've done it with AT&T and a lot of other companies. I've done this with it, with them. But it means nothing in the long run. All you're really doing is you're using your vocal skills and your wording capability to dominate somebody with slightly less ability. For any gamers that are listening, it's like a level 98 warrior wizard beating a level 26 crafter Fletcher in some kind of online game. There's absolutely no honor in dominating a lesser opponent. So if you're just beating a ticket, you know, or if you're dominating a low-level bureaucrat, that's not the same thing as a mother who's facing hard time in a state penitentiary in Texas and the possible loss of her child. That's a totally different thing. It's a totally different thing if you have someone who willingly wants to be an activist and willingly wants to partake in the process of showing how ridiculous the state really is. That's one thing. But risking a woman who doesn't want to be in an activist position and just wants to get out of this situation with the least damage possible and get back to her family and get back to her business. You know, we're talking apples and oranges here. This is a totally different thing. And Mark Stevens approached this woman and got her on his show. It's not the other way around. She didn't seek his advice. He went after her. And then, then we'll get on into that. Now, in the process of all that, some of the people have attacked Michael Dean because he has advised her that she needs to get a lawyer. She needs to get a lawyer, and she needs to defend herself in a legitimate way. Legitimate being the state's process, not necessarily what we would call legitimate. And because of that, people are attacking Michael Dean, calling him a statist, because he says that she should get a lawyer. Well, let me throw this twist at you this way. What do you do when the fire inspector finds your business because of some silly minor regulation? For the sake of the principle, you can fight them. You can go to the city building. You can file different paperwork. You can tie them up for years if you want to. You can make life miserable on that fire inspector or on the city that owns him. You can do that just to make your point. And fight them like that. But what do you do when your home's on fire? When your house is actually burning, what do? You call the fire department. Now, it'd be nice if the fire department worked for your dispute resolution agency or for your home insurance carrier. But in the present world, where we drive on government streets in government-authorized cars with government-issued license, you bite the bullet and you call the government fire department. That's what you do. Why? Because your house is on fire. This is not a time to battle philosophical points and try to make some kind of principled stand. Your house is on fire. You take advantage of whatever it is that's available to get that fire put out as quickly as possible. The same thing if you're a young woman with a small child and a struggling business and you're looking at hard time in a Texas state penitentiary with the possibility of your child being taken by so-called child protection agents. You know what you do? You call an attorney. That's what you do. You don't try to fight the state according to the state's, one of the state's strongest processes, one of the state's most impenetrable aspects. That's not how you take on the state. And I'll say this too, it's really easy to give someone else advice that fluffs your own ego or serves your own interests. But it's another thing altogether to give someone advice that will serve their needs in spite of your interests. See, that's a real difference. Now, on the back to the debate that this debate between Michael and Mark Stevens, this took place on Free Talk Live. Now, and let me say this too, when this first happened, this story is about a week and a half old. Maybe 2 weeks old. And I tried not to comment on it to begin with for a couple reasons. I failed, but I tried. I tried to not comment because, first off, Michael's my friend. Michael is a good friend. I like Michael a lot. Michael slightly may have overreacted. He got a little ruder than he needed to be. But then he apologized for that, and he's apologized several times. So, you know, initially my emotions were a bit high on this issue. And initially, you know, I like to not jump out and just fly into something when my emotions are high. I like to calm myself down, step back, and think about things a little bit and really look at stuff. Honestly, My mind is just not that fast. If I try to jump into something and think fast and attack something right off without thinking about it, I very often make mistakes. So I prefer to sit back and look at something and take it apart and analyze it and ask myself, you know, what's the real point here? What are we really looking at? What can I really do? What needs to be done? What shouldn't be done? This is how I try to deal with things. So now I'm trying to stick with my notes here a little bit. So eventually this situation with Michael and Mark ended up in a debate on Free Talk Live. And again, Michael apologized for the tone of the attack, and he complimented Mark, but Mark refused that apology. Mark actually said, "You started out mischaracterizing what I do." Well, you know what? I'm going to play the clip of it, so I won't have to go into all that. But essentially, during the actual debate on Free Talk Live, what Mark does is he uses his considerable skill, his considerable verbal skill, and he uses his brilliant mind, and he goes into legal word plays, and he does some of the very things that irritate people about lawyers the most. Now, Mark is not a lawyer, but Mark has played this game in the legal world long enough that he's probably more seasoned at using, you know, wordsmithing and legal mumbo jumbo than most lawyers are. And that's exactly what Mark does to try to make Michael look bad in this interview. I'm sorry, in this debate. The host of Free Talk Live, try to return Mark back to discussion about whether or not he gives advice. But again, Mark just uses double talk and dodges the point and turns the conversation back the way he wants it to go. Now I'm going to play the spot from the debate, and then I'm going to come back with some points about this.
Well, let's discuss the issues here, because you've already started out mischaracterizing what I did, and so I want to examine the issue. Sorry?
So I was going to say, Mark, what do you do? How is it mischaracterized? Can you clear that up?
Yeah, he said I was giving her advice.
And do you practice law?
I don't practice law, and you know that.
Do you give legal advice?
No, I don't. As to clients, and let me ask you, why did you not call me? Why didn't you pick up the phone and call, at least as a fellow host on LRN, why didn't you call me first?
Okay, I'm interrupting right here. See, that's misdirection. That's what you do. When you start to get caught on something and you know that you've wandered into an area where you really would prefer the conversation not to go, then you misdirect. See, Michael was on that topic. Michael had apologized for that specific thing. And Mark said, as you heard there, that he wanted to talk about, you know, the real facts, the real point of the thing. And then as soon as they get to the real point of the thing, he wants to misdirect. Now, at this point, I want to cut a chunk out because it's just a large section of Mark belittling and attacking Michael with no real objective other than to make him look bad. So there's really no sense in that, because it's not any kind of a fact-based attack or anything. It's just the ability of one person to override the other with a Bill O'Reilly-type attack, and there's just no reason to really play it on my show. And now, what we're going to get back into is when the hosts of Free Talk Live have to interrupt Mark's attack on Michael and try to focus him back on the topic. So here we go with that.
All right, hang on a second, Jens.
Can I jump in here real quick? Mark, here's one thing I wonder about this is when you say that you don't give legal advice. Your show is called Adventures in Legal Land, and you know, people call in.
It's called the No State Project.
I'm sorry, the No State Project.
His book is Adventures.
The book is Adventures in Legal Land.
And it's a great book.
And people call in. Yeah, I've read it actually three times through, and I don't know how many books I've read that many times through. Very few. So when people call into your show and they tell you about things that are going on in their cases, and I don't have another term besides advice for what goes on there. I understand that the term legal advice is a loaded term, and a legal advice can only be given by a lawyer, and generally they won't do that for free. So let's try to characterize as honestly as possible what goes on your program.
This is Ben back again interrupting. Now, I haven't cut any of this section out. You're going to hear the next part you hear was directly after what the host of Free Talk Live said that you just heard. So this is just an interruption without me cutting anything out. The key to this whole conversation is to listen to what Mark says right now at this point. Listen to him claiming that he did give a disclaimer on his show, and that he always gives a disclaimer on his show, and that he gave one to, specifically to Jillian on the show. Listen to that part very clearly, because he's lying. He never said those things on the show with Jillian. You can check it out for yourself. Here we go back again.
Well, what I do is I talk about strategies, and I talk about a model that I have used to uncover the truth. Okay, and I always give and tell people, and I told Jillian this, and anyone who's heard the interview knows, especially if you've heard the off-air commentary, that, or comments that we had that Calvin includes on the podcast that you don't hear live, but I still told her on the air, I'm not telling you what you should do, what you can or cannot do. I'm giving you information, and you can, and I tell everybody this, you don't take my word for it. Everyone knows the line, guys. It's a tired line. I'm a schmuck from Long Island. I could be a pathological liar. Do not take my word for anything. I'm not a leader. I'm not a guru. Verify everything for yourself and make a more informed decision for yourself. So to say that I'm telling people, go out and do this, that's wrong. I will admit that I do what would be considered the unauthorized practice of law when I talk about nonviolent noncompliance with the tax code. And I tell people that if you want to get to a voluntary society, that has to include the non-cooperation with the tax code. So if Mike wants to attack me for that, let him do it. But not for what I'm doing with clients on a day-to-day basis and not for what I do on the show. I always tell everyone, investigate and verify for yourself everything I say.
Okay, this is Ben back again, and I want to apologize for this bad sound quality. When you take an MP3 and you keep recording over and over and over on it, it starts to deteriorate pretty badly. But what you just heard him say there is a lie. He didn't tell Jillian that. He didn't tell it at all. I listened to the entire program. I never heard any of that disclaimer at any point in the program. So let's hear one more brief little section of the debate. And then I'll have some comments. This is Ian Freeman talking at this point.
And so I've heard all these things, but what I understood what Michael was saying was that the concern is that somebody who tunes in for a 10-minute period, for instance, or 15 minutes in their car when they're going somewhere, they happen to hear the show on the radio, for instance, that they may not necessarily catch those disclaimers. And I guess there's some level of concern as to whether or not that's going to put people at risk for following suggestions that they might not totally understand or have had time to really verify.
Okay, and that's really the point. What Ian said right there is absolutely correct. That really is a major aspect of why Michael began this process to begin with, but also because Jillian, the woman involved, is a good friend of Michael's, and he was specifically concerned about her and how this might happen with her. And remember that during the actual show where Jillian was on with Mark, he never gave any kind of a disclaimer like he's talking about here in this debate. He never gave any kind of disclaimer like that. Now, what I'm going to do, I'm going to stop right now, and we're going to have a very short 30-second commercial, and then we're going to get back into this. So stick with me for 30 seconds. I'll be right back. Folks, have you seen the silver and gold trading cards from Shire Silver? You have to check these out. They're specific weights of real silver or gold laminated inside trading cards, and they're a great way to show the world a better way to save, spend, and share precious metals. And now you can buy them using bitcoins or Federal Reserve notes. Folks, you really need to check this out. Go over to Shire Silver, watch the video on the main page, check out the list of merchants that accept silver and gold trading cards, and you can even learn how you can get paid to help spread the word about Shire Silver trading cards. Okay, so getting back to the topic here. So what Mark actually needs is a disclaimer, a real disclaimer, not a cutesy talk around in circles disclaimer like what you heard in the recording. He needs a real disclaimer, and he needs to play it in the beginning of his show. He needs to play it after breaks in the show, and he needs to put it on his website. Because if you go to his website, now I didn't search every page of his website. I went to the front page, and I looked from top to bottom, and I couldn't find any kind of a disclaimer. But he needs some kind of a disclaimer that says, basically, I'm not an attorney, I do not give legal advice, no results are guaranteed or implied, and everything you do is at your own risk. He needs to say that plain and in common words, and he needs to not try to be cutesy about it and use his little New York, New Jersey, whatever shtick that he pulls there. He needs to throw that away. You know, in the specific industry that we're talking about here, words matter, and he knows that, and he plays on that every time he goes to court. He plays on the fact that words have meaning. And then when he gives his disclaimer, when he gives it, which he didn't do with Jillian, when he gives his disclaimer, he gives a vague gobbledygook of nonsense that is not really a disclaimer. He needs to say openly that he's not an attorney, he does not give legal advice, and no results are guaranteed or implied, and everything you do is at your own risk. He needs to say that clearly, and he fails to do that. And I think he's smart enough that he does that for a reason. So he had no disclaimer, no disclaimer that's clearly available on the front page of his website. To my knowledge, and from what I heard, there is no disclaimer on his show, none in the intro of the show, certainly would not the one with Jillian. And as the show, if you start listening to the show with Jillian on it, as the show begins to progress, first, his co-host, JT, actually gives legal advice right off, you know, if he's the first one that does that. And then followed up almost immediately by legal advice from Mark. Now we can have word games here and say what is legal advice and what isn't legal advice. But if you actually call a lawyer, and I've done this, you call a lawyer that you have done business with and you know, and he is what you might consider your lawyer. And when you're talking to him, any advice coming from him is legal advice. You're not asking him about hunting. You're not asking him about how to tie a shoe. You're asking him about the law, and you're asking his advice. That's what the act of talking to an attorney is. And Mark, in a very real sense, is an attorney, even though he's not, you know, he doesn't have, like, the Bar Association stamp of approval, and he rejects all those things as being illegitimate, which I agree with him on that. But the fact is, he is an attorney. He is an agorist attorney. And now, really, let's call it what it is. He's an underground attorney. He's a black market attorney. There's no shame in that. When anarchy eventually wins out and the state collapses, we will need people just like Mark in order to figure these things out. He is as much a critical aspect of the future of anarchy as any other, you know, as the cobbler or as the roof builder or as any other aspect of society. And we don't need the state's permission to do these things. I agree 100% with Mark on these issues that I'm talking about. But while we're still in this system, people need to know whether or not he's an actual attorney. Okay, so he did give advice. He did give advice to Jillian right after JT gave advice, and there was no disclaimer. More advice was given without the disclaimer when he was referring to a movie, and that was in an off-air situation. And if you hear the recording, if you hear the actual podcast with Jillian and Mark on it, you'll know what I'm talking about. Then there was more advice from Mark and JT without a disclaimer. And then there was a personal story of bravado by Mark. This is kind of a line-by-line through Jillian's section in there. There was a personal story of bravado by Mark. And then Jillian informed Mark that she was looking at a third-degree felon. And then at that point, Mark gave advice on how to deal with the situation over the phone. But still, there was no disclaimer. He told her that she could do this whole court thing over the phone. But he didn't give her any kind of disclaimer. Now that's legal advice. He's telling her how to handle her case and get it done over the phone. And so at that point, Mark asked how she planned to run her defense. And Jillian kind of gives an overview of her plan. Now, Mark clearly states that Jillian is unfamiliar with his show and his methods. He says that very clearly, and so there's no doubt whatsoever that Mark understands that Jillian doesn't really know what it is that Mark does and what his methods were. So then, at that point, Mark basically brags about his methods and his successes and so forth. And then Mark suggests to Jillian that she should file for a motion to change the venue. And still at this point, there is no disclaimer. The closest thing at any point in time during this whole conversation with Jillian, the closest thing to a disclaimer that Mark gives is he says, I think two different times he says, now if you decide not to do these things, you won't hurt my feelings. That's not a disclaimer, folks. That is not a disclaimer. That is not an indication. You know, any lawyer who is licensed and who is active on a case would say something like that. That is not a disclaimer of any kind. Mark says that his feelings won't be hurt if she refuses his advice. And then, and that's off air. I think he did it on air one other time too. But back on the air, Mark says that the state has no legitimacy. I agree. But they don't know that. Then he explains his methods, again with no disclaimer. He says lots of people have used these methods with good results, and there's no mention of the hazards, and there's no disclaimer. At no point does he tell her, now, you know, Jillian, if this doesn't work, you could be facing hard time. He doesn't say anything like that. And then at the end of the section with Jillian on it, she's not on for his whole show. She's just on for the first segment. At the end of the segment with Jillian on the show, he allows her a pretty good amount of time to promote her business and talk about her agorist business that she has. And I appreciate that from Mark. But off air, again, he brags about his success to her with no disclaimer. He again says that there's no hard feelings if she doesn't choose his advice, but that, again, that's not a disclaimer. And then Jillian hangs up and wasn't involved in the whole rest of the show. Now, I listened to the rest of the show, and I didn't hear a disclaimer at any point in the show. If he gave one, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I was nodding off or whatever. I don't think I was, but I've listened to it a couple times. And I think three times that I've listened to the whole thing, and I don't hear a disclaimer anywhere in it, not a legitimate disclaimer. And now, again, I want to go back to, why this is important, I should say this first. I did give my disclaimer earlier that Michael is my friend, and so I have a tendency to want to protect and defend my friend. That's true. That's all true. But I also say, Michael made a mistake. He jumped out there when he was still in anger over the initial event that took place. He probably should have took a day or so and just calmed down and thought about it. But in Michael's defense, that's what passion does. That's what happens when your friend gets attacked. You have a tendency, or not attacked, Jillian wasn't attacked by Mark, but certainly Mark gave her really, really bad advice. And that scared Michael, because had Jillian taken this advice, now it would be different if she was an activist. She knows, if she knew the risk, she's willing to, make the point and, take that risk of getting thrown in prison. If she's, seriously doing that for the point of showing how illegitimate the state and illegitimate the court system and illegitimate the justice system is, if she's doing that, then Mark's advice is perfect. That would be great. But that is not what Jillian is doing, and Michael knew that. So Michael's passion in this, you have to realize that that's where he was coming from. And Mark Stevens should have realized that from the level of passion that Michael was displaying. And so when Michael apologized repeatedly for that, if Mark were really an upstanding individual, really a man of honor, he should have recognized that and understood it and accepted that apology, and then allowed the conversation to go in the direction of, is this a functional thing for the liberty movement? Is this a positive way to deal with being attacked by the state? What is the best way to get the least amount of pain coming from the state? What is the best way that we can, attack the state and try to bring it down or whatever? Because that's actually a part of what Mark believes and teaches over there, that this is the only way, attacking the justice system and exposing its fallacies is the only way to defeat the state. And that's just, that's simply wrong. I mean, that's just wrong. It's not even, to me, it's short-sighted, to think that the one area that you specialize in is the one area that must be the one that we use to take down the state. Well, I would disagree on practical levels and philosophical levels. On practical levels, no, it's not. They don't care. The state doesn't care. The state knows it's illegitimate. All those people working for the government, they don't care if it's legitimate or not. They just care that they continue their dominant behavior and get a paycheck. That's all they care about. If we were talking to someone whose specialization is economics, then it would be highly likely that they would see their specialization as the aspect that's going to take the state down. And you know, with my knowledge of economics, I see that as one of the major things that will take the state down. It's not something we have to actively be involved in. The state will do it itself because of the state's own internal flaws. But again, I'm talking about something that I have a great amount of knowledge about, and I don't know what Marx's knowledge is on, you know, on economics. But I know this. As people begin to understand the flaws of the legal system, and as people begin to understand why there is no justice in the United States, this will be a very important aspect of why they turn away from the state as their protector and as their provider of justice. This is a very legitimate point that Mark has. But the way you do that is not by actively going in and using magic words and intimidating individuals and getting judges to say stupid things. And then, because here's all they'll do. If they have to, they'll just change the procedure and they'll eliminate your little magic trick. I'm going to do a podcast probably tomorrow or the next day, maybe early next week, where I have an interview from Porkfest where a gentleman comes up, to the camp there where we were recording, and he expresses he's a sovereign citizen. And, I'm not going to go into that today, but he expresses his situation being a sovereign citizen, and he expresses all of his method for dealing with the state and so forth. And I just let him talk. I see major flaws in the sovereign citizen movement, and I see major flaws in what it is that they do. But I could tell by the level of frustration and the anger that he was feeling with the state that he really needed to get this stuff off his chest. So I did not confront him. I just let him talk and let him explain himself. And another aspect of this is when you have a sovereign citizen, a person who really believes the whole line of the sovereign citizen stuff, you're not gonna pop their little bubble just by going, "Hey, that's not gonna work." It won't work that way. There are levels and levels and levels of things that they have adopted as truth. And just, you know, poking at them is not going to convince them of anything. This is very much like my argument about the 9/11 truthers or about, say, the chemtrails or whatever. A person who buys the state's whole story on 9/11, you're not going to walk up to them and tell them the most radical aspects of the 9/11 truther theories and get them to adopt, you know, to just suddenly say, "Oh, well, that's it. The state lied and 9/11 was a hoax." That doesn't work. That method won't work because they've already bought into, they've already invested so much of themselves in believing the state's story. They're not just going to abandon it over a quick phrase or two. Well, it's the same way with a chemtrail person. You're not going to convince anybody, who has really bought into the state's lines. You're not going to convince them by shouting weird things about chemtrails. You need to build line upon line, precept upon precept, and you need to find out why they believe what they believe and then work slowly into that. Well, a person in the sovereign citizen movement, if you just run up there and poke their bubble, you're not going to have a positive result. So, and it goes in both ways. If you're dealing with someone who's entirely sold on the state, you're not going to convince them of anything by simply attacking them. It's not going to work. I'm going to take another 30-second break for a second commercial, and I'm going to be right back after that. So stick with me. I'll be right back. 30 seconds. Folks, I want to talk to you about survival gear bags. Survival Gear Bags is about more than just great gear bags and survival kits. Check out their website by clicking the banner at badquaker.com. Survival Gear Bags has everything from wise food storage products to tactical equipment to camping supplies to clothing and rain gear to hydration and purification systems to books and DVDs. Plus, Survival Gear Bags is known for its service, and it's owned and operated by people who understand and adhere to the zero aggression principle. So get over to Survival Gear Bags and get the stuff you need. Okay, thanks for sticking with me through the commercial. So let's get back to this thing of, how is it that we deal with the state? So Mark Stevens has said that the only way to take the state down is through his process, the process that he specializes in. And I said a minute ago, that's really short-sighted. That really, you know, that's like, boy, I don't know. I'll have to think of something to compare it to. But, you know, it's really short-sighted to block out every other thing, block out the entire military-industrial complex and everything that they're doing, and the blatant way that the government is now just killing people without really even, you know, without really even apologizing for it. You get on the president's list, he sends a drone, you're dead, end of story. Prominent situations where the government is using its military fist is just way overstepping the bounds that even the most strong statist would normally say, you know, well, that's where you draw the line. And the government just tramples across that line and goes on. So, you know, will we take down the state by attacking its justice system? Absolutely not. Mark is dead wrong. That is not the only way or the primary way that you're going to take down the state. First off, you're not going to take down the state. There's too much involved in keeping the state alive. As I say on a regular basis, as long as there's a market for the state, as long as there's a desire to have the state, there's going to be a state. The market will provide the state. What you have to do is take away the desire for the state. As you educate people and as you raise up a new generation that of children that live without constant violence as the answer to how they approach each problem, as you raise up your family using peaceful methods and using the zero aggression principle in your day-to-day lives, and as you use yourself and your family as an example to others, and as you reach out to others and more people see that, that's the primary way right there that we spread this gospel of peacefulness and of zero aggression principle and property rights and liberty. That's the number one way, by living your own life according to that standard. And then as more people see that and as education reaches out to more and more people, then see, again, if you just attack the state, you're doing exactly what the state wants you to do. If Mark Stevens and his whole process actually became a threat to the state, well, you know, what would happen? Well, I don't know. Andrew Breitbart was a little bit of a threat to the state. What happened to him? Julian Assange was a little bit of a threat to the state. What's going on with him? You see, the state has no morals whatsoever. The people working in government are more than willing to do whatever has to be done to take out any individual. And if Mark Stevens really, and his process, really begins to become a threat to the state, he will be eliminated. I don't know how they would do that. They have a pretty wide imagination. They might do with him as they did with Peter Schiff's dad. They might do with him as they've done with, a lot of other people. They might just find something to trump up charges and throw him in jail for it and take everything that he owns. They do things like that all the time. They don't care. There's nothing in the legal system that is based on real law. There's nothing in the justice system that has anything to do with real justice. It's all fake. So they don't have any problem lying and cheating and breaking their own rules. They'll do that. They'll just, you know, think of the guy, his name escapes me for the moment, but think of the elderly gentleman that did so much great work with the Fully Informed Jury Association. He was doing absolutely nothing wrong. He was legally distributing paperwork, pamphlets. That's all he was doing, legally distributing pamphlets. And he had to flee the country for his own safety. And he's out of the country now. These guys would literally, this old man, they would run up, grab him, throw him to the ground, and treat him brutally. Well, you know, you can only do that so much, and you get to a certain age where you just can't take that risk anymore. And he was wise enough to leave the country for his own sake, and now he's living in exile. And there are others the same way. People have had to leave the United States to protect themselves financially, to protect themselves from going to jail, to protect themselves for other reasons. Because these people that work for the state, They don't care about the rules. If you want to really see what I'm talking about, go over to YouTube and type a search in for Jimmy Justice. Jimmy Justice is a guy in New York City that goes around and films employees of the city breaking the city rules, parking their car in front of a fire plug, or using their cars, their city cars for private purposes, blocking traffic so that they can go over and get a sandwich, things like this that these city workers do in blatant violation of the city's rules and in blatant violation of laws at times. And Jimmy Justice catches him on camera doing this stuff. And they've got really violent with him. They've busted up his camera and thrown him around and done all these kind of things. But you look at this, and there is no legitimacy whatsoever in any of the justice system in the U.S. But you're not going to take this beast down by using that. Exposing it is great. Doing what Jimmy Justice does is great. Doing what the guys at Cop Block do is great. Doing what Mark Stevens does is great at exposing this stuff to the general public. As long as the person doing the actual activism knows what they're doing, understands the danger, and is willing to take the risk of going into this. That wasn't the case with Jillian. That was not the case, and that's what upset Michael. Now, back to the main point of it, though. You can't take down the beast using this method. You can't take down the beast using any one method. What we have to do is we have to raise up our families, make your own life adhere to the zero aggression principle, property rights, and liberty. Teach that to others. And then let the state kill itself. That's what has to be done. If we were to take down the state today, if we could somehow magically find the special secret button that, Murray Rothbard talked about, a button that if you could, or maybe he said switch. I think he said a switch, that you could just throw the switch and the state would end tomorrow. And he said, yeah, he would throw that switch. He would push that button. And, in many ways, I would too. But the fact is, until the state comes to its complete maturity, and until people see what this thing really is, they'll just want another one to replace it with. And that's what they've done over and over. This is what revolution does. Revolution is when people get to the point where they can't take it anymore, and they physically rise up and rip the government down, but they don't get rid of the state. The state just shifts. It's like a people in mythology, or people in sci-fi or whatever, should know what a shapeshifter is. It's right when you think you've got this creature, right when you think you've got it in a position where it can't get away, and all of a sudden it becomes something else and flies away, or it becomes something else and slithers down through a crack and evaporates and it's gone, and then it comes back as something even more powerful than what it was to begin with. And that's what the state does. You fight against a government, you fight against individuals in a government, you demonize those individuals in the government, and then there's a revolution, and then that government topples, and then somehow a more powerful government pops up. Think about the American War of Independence. And I say that, here it is July 5th, 2012. I'm talking, a day after everybody's shooting off fireworks, talking about Independence Day and everything. Well, you think about the War of Independence with the United States and Britain. The colonists were upset about a tea tax and a stamp tax that was applied to any paperwork that was shuffled back and forth. And a couple other little things like that, like soldiers being quartered in houses. And there was a couple of issues like this that upset the colonists. And they were willing to risk their lives, risk their fortunes, and go to war over this. And they did so, and they did so successfully, and they kicked out the governing body that had oppressed them. They did that, and they did so pretty successfully. Unfortunately, and I'm not going to go into this today, but unfortunately, they allowed a guy like Washington to have way too much influence in the war. They should have stuck with the methods of people like Ethan Allen and some of the others. But, without going into all that, one way or the other, they threw off the British rule, and they were independent. And they made up basically an agreement between the newly formed states, which was the Articles of Confederation, and everybody was pretty happy with it. Now, the problem was the Articles of Confederation didn't provide any way to pay off the debts that Washington and Hamilton had developed with bankers and arms suppliers. Completely unnecessary debts, I might add. So the Articles of Confederation, so there was a coup. That's what there was a coup. And the Articles of Confederation were thrown out, and an oppressive government was dumped right back on the same people that had just fought off an oppressive government. Except when the new government was formed, the new United States government was formed, it was immediately far more oppressive than the British had been just a few years earlier. Automatically, this new government began oppressing worse than the old. And if you think about any other revolution, think about the French Revolution, the same thing happened. The old government was oppressive. And so there's a horrible, bloody revolution. And the new government comes in worse than the old. You think about the revolution in England itself. When back in the days of Cromwell and all that kind of stuff, each time there was a revolution and the new government took over, they were worse than the old one. Bring it forward to, without going into all the banana republics and all the revolutions that the American CIA has created over the years. But you look at real revolutions that naturally develop in countries, like the Russian Revolution. You take a look at that one. And what you have is, you have some problems with the old government, but rather than letting the thing live to the point of where it collapsed on itself, which the old Russian government would have done, the opportunists come in and start a revolution, and then they take advantage of that revolution, and somehow they come out on top as the new government. And of course, immediately, they're far more repressive than the old government. The deaths that took place at the hands of, first off at the hands of Lenin, but then far worse at the hands of Stalin. This was way beyond anything that the old Russian czars would have ever done to their people. But it was okay with Stalin to do that. And you can look at this same pattern happening over and over. And I'm telling you right now, if you attack the government of the United States in any way, militarily, politically, through the political processes, Ron Paul followers, through the political processes, if you attack the American government in any way, through the legal system, through the justice system, so-called justice, however you attack it, it will do one of two things. It will either just change its rules and defeat you, pluck you out, throw you in jail, kill you. It'll do one of those things, or you'll win, the government will collapse, and the shape will shift, and the monster will be worse than it was before you started dealing with it. That's what they do. Look through history. See it over and over and over again. That's what it always does. Well, there's no profit in that. We cannot reach, our what Michael Dean calls the libertarian utopia or libpair. Libertarian paradise that he talks about. Of course, I think all my listeners should understand. If you don't know what I'm talking about right now, you should get over to YouTube, to badquicker.com and on YouTube, and take a look at the video that's titled Anarchy in the World of Tomorrow. That gives you a much better explanation than I have time to do right now. But I'm not looking for a perfect utopia where everything is just, peachy keen and there's butterflies and rainbows and Skittles rain from the sky. That's not what I'm looking for. I don't believe anything like that will ever happen. But once a generation, I say this over and over, once a generation lives their entire life without the state, humans will never want to return to it again. They'll see what liberty and what freedom is really like, and they will never return to the state again. But we have to allow the state to come to its complete maturity and then collapse. Because only at its complete maturity can mankind see past all the lies and all the fog and all the imagery and see what the state really is at its core. And when the state gets to that point and begins turning on its own supporters and its own people and begins devouring itself, then the rest of humanity can watch that and know without any doubt, this is what the state is. This is the true hideous nature of this beast. And this is why we can never have it. Not even on a small scale. It can't be. We can't have it. And then we can allow individual communities to do whatever they want to do, to develop in the way that they feel that they need to develop. And little tiny governments will develop naturally, but governments that are not based on coercion, that are not based on force and aggression, but based on voluntarism. And that'll happen. And some of those will probably be socialist, and some of them will be communist, and some of them will be fascist, and some of them will not be. Some of them will be market-based. And it's impossible for us today to look ahead and see what society will look like in those times. But we can be assured of one thing. The only way that we can ever have a society, a worldwide society, where each individual is allowed to develop the kind of government that they want, and each community can develop the kind of government that they want, the only way we can have that is if the current belief system, the state, that thing that that people imagine in their mind, gives legitimacy to these oppressive governments. That has to die completely. There has to be no remnant of this myth left in people's mind that somehow some people can use aggression, that somehow some people are legitimately using aggression to control the rest of humanity. When that dies, then we will have won. But we can't kill that. All we can do is provide the answer. You can't, it's the old thing about you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And that's exactly the case with libertarianism, and that's the case with an anarcho-capital society. You can't force it upon anyone. You can't actively destroy the government and expect an anarcho-society to develop. It won't happen. It can't happen. You have to allow the old thing to display the completeness of its illegitimacy, and then you can do this. Okay, folks, I've run out of time. For more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com, and thank you very much for listening today.